frame I find. Open my heart with the whispers of truth to live a conscious life, to live a conscious life on the growing edge.
And now, here's Allie.
Hello, and welcome to Growing Edge Live. I'm Allie Benjamin, your host, and every week we come on live here at the New Thought Media Network and share a positive message. We have conversations with individuals that are channeling their time, their energy, their resources, their attention, their passions into doing good work in the world and creating more peace and abundance and joy for all. And so today we have an amazing guest, Cynthia James, who you will get to meet in just a while. And so I'm really happy that you're here. I'm really happy that Cynthia's here. We've got our producer, Michael, that's on board, and we're going to have a great show. So get comfortable, and here we go. So the first thing that we usually do here is our segment called Ask Allie. And this is where I take questions from our viewers and bring them online to see what wants to come forth. And today I have a question from Helen. Thanks, Helen. And she says, "Hi, Allie. I've been struggling to stay positive and find myself feeling envious of other people in my life that seem to have things easier and experience more joy. I often feel discontent with myself and my life, thinking the grass is greener elsewhere. Can you help?" Well, Helen, thank you for this question. I think a lot of us struggle with that feeling like the grass is greener elsewhere. And I do have some thoughts about it because it's something that I've actually experienced myself when I was younger. And occasionally it creeps in if I don't have my spiritual practice intact and operating. So firstly, I think that when we're focused outside of ourselves, when we're paying more attention to other people's lives and what's going on in their lives, and we're not focusing on what's going on in our own life or what power we have to influence our life, then we can feel discontent. We can be outwardly focused, thinking that somehow out there needs to change, or I need to get something from the outside in order for me to feel more content, more satisfied, find more joy in my own life, when really it's the opposite. It's an inside out job. And so developing a meditative practice every day. And I feel a little bit like a broken record because I talk about this so often, but having a special time for yourself every day, a couple times a day, where you tune out of what's going on the outside and develop a love of going within and tuning in to create an environment inside yourself that is so refreshing and rewarding that it's actually it draws you in. It's something that you look forward to. And so having and developing a mindfulness practice, a meditation practice every day, where you cultivate this inner environment that gives you so much fuel, so much energy, to that it fuels you throughout the day, so you're not so concerned with what other people are doing or what other people are experiencing. And you have that deep reservoir of resources within you that is based on who you truly are as a unique individual, that you have within you everything that is required, everything that is needed for you to live a content, satisfied, passionate, created just the way you want it life. But it takes time, it takes attention. So meditation, building that inner environment that gives you a sense of presence. when we go inside ourselves and we go inside our mind, inside our heart, inside our guts or our belly, to tune into the wisdom that we have right within inside ourselves and develop a deep interest in that, cultivating that heart wisdom, that intuitive gut instinct, and tuning in to the wisdom that you have when you tune in, not just into your local mind, but to the greater mind. So a meditation is the first step in developing self-contentment, moving into a place of self-love. And also, this is something that I found super helpful when I'm looking out there and wishing I had what other people had, is to have a gratitude practice. Because often, when we're so focused on what other people are experiencing or what other people have, we're overlooking the immense blessings that we have in our lives. When we slow down, when we take the time to count our blessings, whether it's being grateful for this beautiful body that you inhabit, giving attention to the things that you feel grateful for that you do in your life. Maybe you have hobbies. And if you don't have hobbies, that's another thing. What would you love to do? What did you love to do as a child or a young adult that really gave you a lot of joy? And maybe revisit some of those hobbies or those things that you used to engage with, spend your time and attention doing and experience, that can sort of give you a sense of, wow, there's more to finding pleasure in the simple things. For me, going for a walk, painting. This weekend I facilitated a paint party and joined with a group of women as a fundraiser to paint and find community in women's circle and tapping into creative ideas and flow and lose yourself in the meditative practice of simply painting or drawing or doodling. There's lots of ways we can move out of that critical mind, out of that track of discontent, and find simple joy by participating in things with other people, hobbies, pastimes that delight you and lift your spirits. And so when we have a gratitude practice, when we start to identify things that we can do that bring us into the present moment and align us with the simple joy of being alive, of being here on planet in an earth suit, with this opportunity to direct our attention, our energy to doing things that bring us simple pleasures, and then outreach. I know there's people in your life that would love to get a phone call from you, love to hear what you're up to, and you'd love to connect with them, I'm sure. So this is a long checklist of simple things to do to bring you out of that painful habit of discontent or looking for the green grass elsewhere. The grass is green right underneath your feet. And when you take the time to notice it, give thanks for it, and maybe even say a little prayer of thanksgiving for all that you have and all that's becoming based on your attention, your attitude, and your energy. So another thing, this is something that I always encourage people to do, look for an opportunity to serve. Look for a way to get out of your life and share your gifts with others that are less fortunate, or others that could really use your particular skill set or your particular mindset to help them to experience connection and more joy and contentment. So Helen, thanks for sharing this question, and many blessings to you right where you are. And if you, the audience that's watching, if you have a question that you'd like to bring to the forum here, please do so. You can send that to growingedgelive@gmail.com. Thank you. All right. So now we're moving into our conversation with the glorious Cynthia James. I'm going to read a little bit about Cynthia. I met her a few years ago at the Big Sky Retreat, and she was a keynote speaker there. And everyone just adored her, her energy, her beauty, her grace on stage, and the way she links ideas together. It's just really graceful and masterful. Cynthia is a New Thought leader, motivational speaker, teacher, coach, author, singer, dancer. Cynthia is a transformational specialist and one of today's brightest and best loved inspirational leaders and teachers. She guides thousands of people to make changes at a deep level for lasting healing in their lives. Whether coaching, speaking, or teaching, Cynthia invites participants to inquiry, introspection, and integration. We'll talk a bit more about that. Cynthia has two master's degrees, one's in consciousness studies, and the other is in spiritual psychology. She's authored the best-selling and award-winning books, What Will Set You Free, Revealing Your Extraordinary Essence, and I Choose Me, The Art of Being a Phenomenally Successful Woman at Home and at Work. So there's a lot more to Cynthia, and she's going to share that with us. So Cynthia James, welcome to Growing Edge Live.
Oh, Allie, I'm so happy to be with you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's such a blessing to see you and to have you on the show. And I know that people are going to learn a lot from you because you've really got a lot of incredible things going on. And I know that you've got an offering that you want to share a little bit later with people, how they can actually get involved with you and work with you. So where did it all start with you? How did you get to be where you are today? And what were you always spiritually inclined? Were you always spiritually curious? Were you religious as a child? How did all of that begin?
Well, thank you for asking that question. I consider myself a miraculous unfolding because I grew up with a single mom. We were on welfare. My biological father was an alcoholic and left pretty soon after I was born. And then my stepfather, who my mother married when I was five, actually was violent. He was a wife beater and a pedophile. And so as a kid, it was so weird because my family was deeply religious, African Methodist Episcopal, right? And so we were always in church and we were always doing these things on Sunday, but the rest of the week was chaos. And so I was having a hard time, you know, reconciling these two different things. And because I'm a seeker and I'm curious, I always ask questions that made people uncomfortable. I was like, well, you know, if God is love, how come he's so mad at us? And stuff like that, which would upset people greatly. And what I realized is part of that was an inner knowing, an intuitive knowing that knew something was out of sync. And so I spent a lot of my life seeking and going different places and doing different things. And, but it was all about how do I grow? How do I learn? Basically, how do I heal? And so, you know, if you look at my life, I've had a lot of careers. And so they were all though about expression. They were all about creativity. They were all about bringing my best self to the planet. And so that coupled with grace of being led into extraordinary spiritual communities, you know, they began to merge.
Beautiful. So there's so much to what you just said. I want to go back to your childhood. I want to go back into those multiple careers you've had. So who would you say was the biggest influence? You've talked about some really dark stuff as far as your stepfather, as far as your family, you know, being one way during the week. And then on Sundays, there just wasn't this coherence with what was going on in the church, with what was going on within the week time in your family. Were there, you know, there's a dark energy, but also a lot of light. And so who were the Who were the people that most impacted and influenced you? Maybe you could give us, you know, the darker one and then the lighter one.
Well, you know, I really feel like my father and my stepfather were, you know, many people believe that you come to this planet with a soul lesson. And I believe that my soul lesson was to love and care for myself. Mm-hmm. And those two men were feeding the energy that said, you know, you're not important, you don't matter, you know, you're punished if that, right? But I believe that on the other side, I had a grandmother. I actually come from a line of women who were, it was a dichotomy. So they were all prophetic dreamers. But they also had gone through trauma. You know, they were overweight. They left the planet ill or depressed. And my grandmother, though, was, even though she had had a hard life because she grew up in the South and had to raise four kids by herself, she had this thing. Like when I was little, she took me to this woman who was a tea leaf reader. And she took me to a play where there were Black people, you know, Pearly Victorious. And I'd never seen Black people on a stage before. And I think it was the spark that said, ooh, I think I can be there. And so I just, oh, hi, Cindy. I just saw my grandmother kept showing me possibilities. And she used to tell me all the time, you're going to be on this mountaintop and all of these people are going to be around you. Interesting, today I live in Denver with a mountaintop and I have followers. But at that time, I thought she was a little crazy, but she kept showing me possibilities.
Beautiful. So you learned a lot from those family members through the, you know, the more negative unconscious behaviors, sort of gave you that spark to make it your life purpose to love and take care of yourself. And then with the influence of this particular grandmother, it sounds like she really opened you up to what's possible. And so when you were young, did you ever have any sort of mystical experiences? You talked about reading tea leaves. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of down that path.
Yeah, you know, I have the gift that all of the women in my family, I'm a prophetic dreamer. I dream mm-hmm. things and they happen. I learned pretty young to stop telling people what I was dreaming, because, you know, people would call me a witch or whatever. But I realized that portal of prophetic dreaming was an entree into my intuitive knowing and allowing it to grow. And so as I grew as a person, then my willingness to trust my intuition and to follow it grew. Because, you know, the thing is, it was happening the whole time. But, you know, when you're young or when you're not totally conscious, you doubt it. Well, why would I go here when that doesn't make any sense? Well, why would I say yes to this when that's crazy? But as I grew and as I took a deeper dive into my spirituality, I started getting, oh, that's the way the universe talks to you. That's the way the universe guides you. Pay attention and be obedient.
Mm-hmm. So how did this dreaming, this prophetic dreaming, affect your family? If all the women sort of, that was just the way they rolled, would the men in the family, would the other women that weren't so tuned in, how would they take these dreams and these forecasts of the future?
You know, I think today they'd call us airy fairy, because everybody was like, oh, that's just Mary. Or, oh, here she goes again. Or, oh, no. But there was a part of the family that knew, pay attention, because there was validity to what was being said. It was just so outside of the box that, you know, for people, it was like, well, I'm not going to tell anybody outside of this family about these crazy women because I don't want them to think I'm crazy.
Yeah. So I was noticing when I was reading your bio that you've taken people on some sacred tours and you've traveled a lot in your life. Have you found that this, the power of women's intuition, sort of crosses the international lines? Have you found other women around the world that you connect with in this way, being intuitive, being really in tune with, you know, your dream life, your what might happen in the future? Is this something that you've explored on some of your sacred travels?
Yeah, you know, taking people on pilgrimages actually came from one of those intuitive things. I kept meditating and I kept hearing take people on pilgrimage, which made no sense. You know, I was a minister at Mile High, you know, and had a big job. And it's like, I'm going to leave and take people on pilgrimages. And it didn't make any sense. And then I got a phone call from a woman who said, listen, I take people to Chartres, France to walk the largest labyrinth in the world. And I'm looking for a facilitator to come with me. Would you like to come? The moment I said yes, Allie, and put out a message, 60 people signed up. And I was like, oh. And so who I partnered with was one of those women you're talking about. Her name is Lauren Artress, and she is the foremost authority on labyrinths in the world. And then Kathleen McGowan, who is an incredible author and has a lot of knowledge about the divine feminine, asked me to come and do a thing with her. So yes, I have met extraordinary women, but this is the thing. There's something powerful about, you know, get apart for a while, where, because I don't take people on tours. I tell them, this is not a tour. This is a spiritual pilgrimage. We will do spiritual practice. We will do rituals. We will connect with people in those environments that are shamans and healers and teachers to take us to another level. And so I'm very clear. People don't sign up to go with me if they're wanting to just go shopping and do a bunch of other stuff. Not going to happen for them.
Yeah, that sounds amazing to be on a tour with that many people. Was it all women or the 60?
No, it was mixed, but we split that first group into half, 30 and 30. Today, I don't take more than 18 people anywhere, because what I discovered is if you have a small group, it becomes a spiritual community.
Mm.
And we connect with each other. Some of the trips I've taken, people are still in our WhatsApp group and coming together and having events and stuff like that. And for me, it's easier because the container can contain, you know, 18 people. But when you start getting to 30 and 40 people, and I know some of my friends are spiritual teachers and they take 50, 60 people all over the world. And it was just too much energy. And as the facilitator, I didn't get to connect individually with everyone when it was that large.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like 18 would be a really great number to create a synergy of sorts. Mm-hmm. And I think that when people are together in a group like that and building that synergy, it sort of is a catalyst for awakening or opening up to intuition. Have there been any, could you share a story or two about some of the things that have happened in some of these groups that you've traveled around to the sacred spaces with? Have there been any sort of phenomenal things that might be interesting to talk about?
Yeah, well, I have a list, but this first trip I took to Chartres, a young woman was in my class at Mile High, and she comes up to me and she goes, I need to be on this trip with you. And I said, okay. She said, but I don't have any money, but I've told God I need to be on this trip. So she comes back like 3 weeks later, and she goes, okay, I've manifested the money. Oh, and I'm pregnant. And I said, great. So then she comes back just before we're to go, and she says, they've told me that there's a chance that there's something wrong with my baby.
Oh.
But I know if I go on this trip, that whatever that possibility is will not manifest. Mm-hmm. So I'm going. And I said, okay. So she comes, and the faith was so striking, not only for me, but for everybody there. And she walked that labyrinth with an intentionality that was extraordinary. And that baby now is 11 years old and healthy.
Oh, that's an amazing and wonderful demonstration, a manifestation of setting an intention and going full force with faith that we actually can heal and make shifts in our lives and create the things that we want to create. I love that you share that story. Is there anything else? Have there been any other
things? So this October, I'm taking my third group to Egypt. And there have been a lot of stuff that's happened because Egypt is mystical. But there was a woman who lives in New York, is a, she worked for Goldman Sachs. She was a financial person. She had done nothing spiritual, but she was introduced to me through a small group. And I kept hearing, invite her to Egypt. And so I invited her, and one of the other women on there said, oh, you have to do this. So here she comes. She hasn't done any spiritual works yet. And I'm thinking, this is a little crazy. But literally, the entire group watched her transform, watched her open, watched her heart open, watched her feminine side come into. I mean, it was striking. It was striking. And today, she's becoming one of my coaches.
Wow. That's a beautiful story, a transformational story. And to be in a group and to be witnessed sort of emerging as that next iteration of you must be a really powerful experience, not only for the woman, but for everyone there. It's just confirmation that we are amazing, powerful individuals. All right, we're going to pop off for a short commercial break. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. See you soon.
Free my mind, open my heart with the whispers of truth. To live a conscious life, to live a conscious life. On the growing edge, on the growing edge.
And now, here's Allie.
Welcome back. So, Cynthia, you mentioned that you served at Mile High. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, what has been your ministry and how has it evolved over the years?
Well, I grew up in Agape with Dr. Michael Beckwith. That's where I got my practitioner training. That's where I got my ministerial training. And then Dr. Roger Teal invited me to Colorado to be an associate minister at Mile High Church. And I did that for 11 years. And it was a gift. I mean, I got to speak, I got to teach, I managed the music ministry, and I'm a singer. You know, I worked with the women's ministry, and I love working with women and GLBTQ. And I got to create events, you know, and it was so, we had a ministerial team. Roger called us the dream team. And we met, we supported, we collaborated. I mean, it was great. And at the 7 year time frame, my husband kept saying to me, you know, you should go see a doctor. You're saying you're tired a lot. And I'm like, well, no, I've manifested my dream life and everything is good and I'm so happy. And finally, it just got to the point I said, okay, I'm going to go to the doctor. when I came back and he said, I want you to look at this paper. And I said, yeah, what is it? And he says, you're headed towards Addison's disease. And I'm like, what is that? And he says, adrenal failure. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? And he goes, yes. So you need to quit your job. I'm like, I can't quit my job. I'm a minister. And so he jokingly said, quit your job, quit your life, make a change. Mm. So I went to Roger and I said, okay, Roger, I need to pull back a little bit to get myself together. And he said, let me talk to you about this tomorrow. So he comes in my office the next day and he says, you know, I've been praying about this. And he said, you're playing with fire and I'm not going to support it. You need to take a sabbatical. Mm. And I was like, no. And he said, this is not for discussion. So I had to take 3 months. Now, let me tell you, when you're an energizer bunny like me and you're used to doing, to have to sit there, not be able to get online with the people in the church in 3 months, I got to see how I had, okay, what is the word I want to say? I had developed an identity that was validated by what I accomplished. Mm. And so now I'm not able to accomplish like this. And so now I have to be still and I have to listen. First thing I saw was I was about 30 pounds heavier than I am now. And I got to see me going down the same path as the women in my family. Mm. I got to see that I would do stuff for everybody else and put myself last. That's where the book I Choose Me came from. Mm. And I had to really look at, what does God really want me to do? So I go back to work after the 3 months and it's really great. But I keep getting these messages in my meditation, get an office, which made no sense because I had an office. Mm. And finally, what happened was, and this is mystical. So anybody who's listening that, you know, this was very interesting. So Mile High does 6 services at Christmas time, holiday services, and they're really beautiful and they're really big. And every time I would come off the stage, I would hear this little voice in my head say, listen to your body. And my body would be a little constricted. And I'm like, the 6th service, I come off. And the voice, like someone is standing next to me, says, you're done here. Mm. And I'm like, what does that mean? Right? So I go home and over the holidays, you know, it just keeps coming back. You're done. Get an office. And so I go to Roger and I say, Roger, okay, listen, I need an exit strategy. And he goes, where are you going? I go, I don't know. Are you going to join another church? No. Are you going to start a church? No. Well, where are you going? I don't know. And he said, you know, this sounds a little crazy. I said, I know, but the instructions are so clear. Mm. So we made a for me to leave in 6 months. And during that time, 2 other practitioners were opening an office and they had an extra office space. So I got this space. Now, I had no clients. I had no marketing plan. I didn't have anything. But I remember Joel Goldsmith had an empty space and he'd go in there and pray all day. And then he ended up having all these clients. And I'm like, I can pray all day. That'll work. And so what was incredible is literally in just a few months, this clientele by word of mouth came. And then that started what is now Cynthia James Enterprises. And that finished my I Choose Me book. And it actually opened for my last book, Does My Voice Matter? But what I want to tell anybody who's listening is, you know, all the puzzle pieces to what you're supposed to do don't come in a package. Mm-hmm. And the instructions are not linear. And so you have to trust so much that you're being guided and not going down some rabbit hole you can't get out of. And so the last 11 years for me have been trust walk after trust walk after trust walk.
Mm. Wow. So you mentioned Agape and Mile High. So one's in California, one's in Denver. Was And now you're still there, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You're still in Denver. So your work at Mile High ended at that point, and you started your own Cynthia James Enterprises, and you're still there in Denver living. So is this something, tell me about your experience living on the West Coast and then moving to Denver to the mountains. That's a big difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, share a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I had a pretty extraordinary life in Denver. I made my living as an actress and a singer. I opened at Harrah's and stuff like that. And when those doors closed, I was already involved with Agape. And so, and my children were there. So, and Agape is another big energy place, just like Mile High. But this was really interesting. About 2 years before I was going to graduate and Roger was inviting me to Colorado, Carl and I, my husband, were like, I feel like we're going to move. But we thought we were going to move in California. So mm-hmm. We were driving around because we wanted space, and we were driving around all these places. And you know, first of all, we didn't have the money to do some of these places in California. And second of all, nothing felt right. So when I got invited to be here, I was taking my ministerial exams, and Carl came to Colorado to look, and we had decided he wanted horse property. And so he was looking for spaces while I'm taking my exams, and I get a phone call. And he says, you need to get on a plane. I found our home. I'm like, I'm taking ministerial exams. I'm not getting on a plane. He goes, no, you don't understand. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I said, if it's ours, it'll be there when I'm done. And so where we live is about 50 minutes outside of Denver, like 40 minutes from Mile High. And it's beautiful. It's in the woods. And it's in a community that's all horse property. And this was the interesting thing. I remember stepping off the plane at DIA and thinking, oh, wow, there was an exhale. It was like the space, right? Mm-hmm. And then the same feeling after 20 years now happens the moment I'm driving to our house and the moment I step on our property, there's this exhale. So people say, well, that must have been really hard. And I'm like, I don't know why it wasn't, except it was ordained.
Yeah. Had you spent much time in the mountains as prior to that?
No. And I am a city girl. I lived in New York and all these places. You know, I'm a city girl. So the people were like, you're going to live on a ranch? You're going to do what? And yeah, I don't have any idea except grace, because it's 50 minutes for us to drive to the theater or, you know, to a great restaurant someplace, but it feels like home. I had a mystical experience when we were looking at the property. This energy came over me and said, you're home. Mm-hmm. And I started crying because it was unlike anything I had ever experienced.
Mm. How large is your property? How many acres is it?
12.
12. And do you have horses?
Mm-hmm. There's two here.
Wow. Yeah, I follow you and your husband, Carl, on social media. So I see some of his amazing photography of your surroundings. And it truly is a magical place, or it looks like it anyway. So
we have a studio here that was Carl's dream from the time he was like 18 years old. Mm. And there was a big space on our property. And so we would go out there. I just want to tell everybody there is power in visualization, because we would visualize what it was like. And when people would come visit us, we'd take them down there. And then I'd take them on this invisible tour up these stairs and stuff. So now we've had this studio for 9 years.
So what's the studio? What kind of work do you do in the studio?
So upstairs, Carl does photography and he does video. You know, like people will come downstairs. we have a guest suite. So somebody can come and write a book there, or they can come and they can work with me on what their messaging is for their website or whatever. And then they go upstairs and they do video with Carl. And then we have a teleprompter and they record these videos so that when they walk out, they have a package for their business.
Oh, wow. That's ingenious. And that sounds like one, it sounds amazing. So let's talk a little bit about what you do and the work that you do currently with people and how people might be able to join you. We earlier talked a little bit about an offering that you have coming up, a conversation. Mm-hmm. And so we'll talk about what you do. And then let's talk a little bit about how people might join this bigger conversation and why they'd want to.
So I am a leadership coach, but my focus is emotional integration. Mm-hmm. And that occurred when I was going through the master's program in spiritual psychology. You were given a task to create your own counseling strategy. And I didn't know it at the time. What came through was really an element of mind-body work. Mm-hmm. And so most people repeat patterns over and over again because emotions hijack them. And so what my work does with leaders and small groups and individuals is we look at three things. So we do inquiry. Okay, where are you now without judgment? What's happening? You know, what's working, what's not working? I mean, we do a kind of deep dive there. And then in introspection, we go into the body because the body has a language. And so we start looking at teaching the client or the staff how to become aware when they're being triggered, where it is in the body and what that messaging is. And I give them tools. And then the last part is integration. So now we take where we were at the introspection, and then we start integrating the tools so that they have a tool chest that they can use to manage energy, because none of us escapes emotions and none of us escapes what's going on in the world, but we can have tools so that we stop sabotaging ourselves.
Mm, beautiful. So people come and work with you, whether it's in person or online, or and they do this deep work and make transformations and shifts and realize their greater goals and visions, I would imagine.
I work with organizations now and government agencies, which was really an answered prayer, because I told God at one point, I don't want to just talk to the choir. I want to talk to people who need this, that are outside of my spiritual community bubble. And so things started coming. And so I'm grateful for that, because what I've learned is that people are struggling all over the world. I mean, we're watching mental health crisis and all that, but they need tools to be able to manage their energy. And with all the division and polarity that's going on, even how to manage within themselves or within their family structures.
Yeah, I love that you're, you know, not just preaching to the choir, so to speak, that this I hesitate to call it new thought message, but, you know, this greater message of self-mastery and self-empowerment, life mastery, is something that we as science of minders or new thoughters have been keyed into since we, you know, opened the first book or went into the first classroom. But, you know, we saw it go mainstream with Oprah. You know, she's been teaching these similar kinds of principles for decades now. And I hear so many businesses, corporations, organizations hiring coaches to learn about the power of the mind and focus of attention and self-inquiry and all introspection and all of this. And so how does it feel when you, or how does it look when you get someone that's not from the sort of self-improvement world, mm-hmm. but in a corporation or mainstream, when they come in, how does that feel different to you than preaching to the choir, let's say?
Well, they come in with some kind of struggle. And I fine-tune language because, you know, those of us who are in New Thought, you know, sometimes we know exactly what we're talking about and people outside are going, what? What is that? But what I talk about is that energy, and I talk about frequency, which a lot of people can understand. And it's like, how do you manage your energy? How do you manage your thinking? How do you manage what you are transmitting and what you are receiving? And people can go, they can start there. And so when I'm talking to people who are leaders of teams, it's like I'm saying to them, okay, your energy is impacting that team. So where are you first? And then how do we transform where you are and then bring that energy to the team? And there's all kinds of, now there's all kinds of assessments and all kinds of things you can use with people that have science based to them. So people can understand them and go, oh, that I can relate to that.
Yeah, that's great. So we talked a little bit about you're offering a conversation, a community dialogue, and you referenced that due to a lot of the chaos, the changes, the political atmosphere, things that are going on in the world, the division, the inequity. What I'm imagining this conversation will address some of these things, or at least give people a platform to be able to share their thoughts and concerns. So will you share a little bit about this? Is it something you've been doing for a while, or is this fairly new?
This is actually new. My last book is called Does My Voice Matter? And I wrote it, but I think I wrote a lot. I wrote it for me first and then for other people, because I spent an enormous amount of the decades of my life trying to find a way to express myself, you know, where I wasn't afraid of being punished or hurt or whatever. And as I'm working with clients, I'm noticing so many people are afraid to express themselves, to stand in their power, to speak their truth. And so I have a community in Kajabi where all my classes and things are. And I decided that this year, every quarter, I was going to open it up to a conversation that's private because it's not like Facebook or one of the other places. And I invite people in, and not everybody gets to speak, but I invite people to come in with something that's bothering them. But there are ground rules. You cannot give advice. You cannot be unkind to people. You know, this is not about political stances. This is about what's happening to you. What are you feeling? What are you experiencing? And then at the end, because it's 90 minutes, in the last 20 minutes or so, I take people into a spiritual practice, because we talk about, just because Mary and Tom and Sue are having these experiences, we're all having it on some level. It's all impacting us because we're interconnected. And so I'm giving them tips and a spiritual practice where we are opening to the healing for ourselves, but we're transmitting it out to the planet.
Beautiful. Well, I'm excited to hear about more about that, because I think that, you know, we don't have forums where we can talk about these things and our concerns. You can't really do it at work. Often you can't even do it within your family, because, you know, people might be leaning on you and you don't want to, you know, share your concerns. And so this would be a safe environment to be able to speak up and hear what's going on in the lives and the minds of other people too. This time can be really challenging for all of us, and sounds like this conversation will be great for those that join. But for those that don't join you, what can you offer us as some food or nourishment to help us to cope with the changing times, to cope with the heavier emotions that get stirred up when, let's say, we turn on the news or we hear the people in our neighborhood complaining about this or that? What can we do to maintain a sort of grounded presence and find a sense of peace and purpose and passion in our lives amidst the great changes that are occurring.
Yeah, well, I loved what you were telling, the answering the question at the beginning. Can I show you my book?
Yeah, yes.
So this is the book, oops, Does My Voice Matter? And the reason I want to show it to you is an answer to your question. I've been on the planet for 7 decades. And so every chapter is a decade. And at the end of every chapter, there are practices and tools to help you ground, to help you stand in your authenticity, to help you connect to your purpose, which lives within you, and to bring your voice. And so what the people who've read the book and some of the testimonials tell me is that those practices have really helped them, because they can do them a little bit at a time and get stronger and stronger, and be a loving presence beyond the adversity that may be close or maybe out here.
Mm-hmm. So do you offer a book study or a course that's based on the teachings within this book?
Yeah, the class for that is coming. It'll be out in the next few months. But in my community, there's a purpose class. There's a self-care class. There's all kinds of books. I have done an enormous amount of meditations for people. And so they can go and download different meditations. I just gave my community 3 months of meditations once a week on tranquility. That's right there. How you can just take these 5-minute meditations, because a lot of people refuse to meditate because they think it takes too long. So I created these 5-minute meditations that people can use to, and they have different topics every week.
Beautiful. Well, that's wonderful. I just love that you're giving people an opportunity to take their own spiritual journey into their own hands with your book and your guidance to create a sense of grounded presence and purpose. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
So I always close with this question. That there's the song, and I'm sure you know it, What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love. And aside for your book and your course, what does the world need now? You know, what does, when you look out into the world after 7 decades of life and experience, and you've spent a majority of your life in service of others, offering your ministry and all the material that you've created to support others. Some people aren't as fortunate to be exposed to alternative spirituality, and they've become disillusioned with religion in general. But there's a great need. There's a great need for humanity to be able to find joy and to move forward. So what is it that, in general, the world needs now?
I think bottom line is to remember who you are. Mm-hmm. You're a unique representation. You're a masterpiece in the making. You're unrepeatable. You're here for a reason, because otherwise you wouldn't be here. Your energy, your presence, your gifts matter. And make no mistake about it, there would be a hole in the universe in this moment if you were not here. So your only job is to wake up and stay awake.
Thank you. I felt like you were talking to me. Thank you, Cynthia, for being a guest on Growing Edge Live, for sharing the light that you share. And it's been really charming, wonderful to get to chat and to spend time with you. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for watching. Thank you to New Thought Media Network and the Satya Center, who sponsors this. And thank you for being here and being a part of this wonderful conversation. Next week, we're going to have another conversation with a beautiful person, Michelle Medrano, coincidentally, who also has spent a lot of her time working at the Mile High Church in Denver. So thank you. Peace and blessings. Lots of love to you. And just take what Cynthia said, that beautiful message that we all can benefit from hearing, and let that be your mantra today. Thank you, Cynthia. Bye-bye.
Free my mind, open my heart with the whispers of truth, to live a conscious life, to live a conscious life on the growing edge.